Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Johnny Tan, author of From My Mama's Kitchen, Food for the Soul, Recipes for Living. Welcome to my weekly From My Mama's Kitchen talk radio show. My guest for this morning is author and illustrator of children's book, Michael Ciccolini. Michael and I will be discussing the legacy of his mother, Marguerite Ciccolini, left behind for him to carry forward the children's book series titled The Pasta Family. Good morning, Michael. Welcome to From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. How are you doing this morning?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Doing fantastic. I am so excited having you on the show. I thought your book is just very well written. The Pasta Family is a wonderful series. Totally, totally cool. And I love the stories. And, of course, the artwork is phenomenal. So congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Let us start by getting to know you a little better. Please give us a quick walkthrough of your life from childhood to the present moment.
Okay, sure. I was born and raised in Newark, New Jersey. I'm the youngest of five children. There's five of us. I grew up in a very tightly knit Italian-American household, from which I'm speaking to you right now. Mm-hmm. When I was 18, I went away to school. I went to the University of Southern California to the film school, and I stayed out in California for probably about 10 or 15 years after college, and I wrote screenplays, and I was in a couple of movies, and I did Hollywood stuff, and I came back here about 3 years ago to help take care of my mom, who was battling an illness, and I did the first book. My mom had written the first book, The Pasta Family, originally for her granddaughter, just as a gift for her granddaughter. There was no idea that it was going to be anything more than that, than just a nice gift. Mm-hmm. And she called me in Los Angeles and asked me to draw it, because I used to love to draw when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so she sent me the text of the book, and I was very, very pleasantly surprised by what she wrote. It was a really beautiful and really simple story that I thought would be beneficial not just to her granddaughter, to my niece, but I wanted a lot of people to read the story. I thought it was as good as any children's book I had ever seen in the actual marketplace. And so I drew the book, and I went about figuring out how to actually produce it and make it into an actual book, which was a huge learning curve. It was something that I had never done before. I really had no idea what I was doing. So I basically had to learn how to do that. And then we made it together into a book, and my niece loved it, and she shared it with other people, and the rest of my family basically started asking my mom if she was going to do another book, because they really liked it. So from there it sort of snowballed, and when I came back here, back east, my mom and I basically sat down together and mapped out the next few books. So book one to book five are a total collaboration between my mom and myself. And even when there were days where it was just me sitting there doing the writing and the drawing, she was always over my shoulder being the editor and making sure we didn't veer off into any tangents and to stick to the stories that we were telling.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful.
She was a great editor. She really, my mom is a great example of a person who later in her life followed her dream. She had a dream to do this for a long time, and she really followed through. I mean, she was in her 70s when she had the idea for the book, and when we were doing the books, doing the actual physical work on the books when I was back here, she was about 74, 75.
Wow.
And it really, really... it really energized her, and I really think it added years to her life being so engaged in something like that.
It's interesting because she spent most of her life being a typical mother, housewife, in an Italian family, so basically the kitchen is her main domain.
Yes, the kitchen, we used to call her, that was her back cave, that was her headquarters. everything, you know, she ran the entire house out of the kitchen.
Right.
And that to me is another touching thing about the books is that, you know, if you knew my mom and you read the books, they all do still come from the kitchen. All of the wisdom in those books is directly from the kitchen and the family dinner table.
What particular thing that made you guys realize that the first book has the potential of becoming a series?
I thought it was because the character, the designs of the character, well, first of all, they're little pasta people. They're little macaroni people. And that's something that translates not just in the Italian-American community, but everybody knows what macaroni is, and everybody likes macaroni.
Right.
And I know that in the Midwest, macaroni and cheese is like a big staple.
Right.
So everybody knows what it is. Everybody loves it. Everybody knows all of the basic shapes of different pastas.
Yeah.
So that was my first clue that, you know, these stories can really, they can really translate, and they're not just for the Italian-American community. And then when they started selling, we would get orders for books from places like Nebraska and South Dakota, and it's like, well, this is amazing. I mean, we were right on our instinct that it was more about the Italian American community, who definitely were the first supporters of these books. And the first review we ever got of the first book was in a newspaper called the Italian American Tribune in Montclair, New Jersey. And from there, from that one story, things started to really snowball in a nice way.
Well, you guys made a wonderful story about pasta, the various shapes of pasta. And in addition to just the story behind the story, the various shapes of pasta, it sort of added a new twist to eating your pasta.
I think so. It makes it a lot more fun.
Yeah.
And one of the most fun things about doing the books was that whenever there was a need for a new character, all I really had to do was go to the supermarket and go into the macaroni aisle and look around. There's so many different shapes, and there's shapes that are not that familiar yet with the general population.
That's right.
Those are great shapes to use too because they're so unique. And that was another thing about what I responded to personally about the books and doing the books. I made sure to go through all the aisles in all the bookstores and look at a bunch of children's books. And I didn't see anything like what my mom had come up with.
Right.
And I almost couldn't believe that nobody had done that before. It seemed to me very obvious. And it seemed to me that little pasta shapes lend themselves to cute little characters. And, you know, my mom is the one who did that. She cracked the pasta code, as I used to tell her.
Right. No question about that. How would you describe the series as a whole to someone who is not familiar with them?
Oh, sure. This is the way I describe it to people. First of all, I always say that basically it's Marvel Comics meets Peanuts, you know, Charlie Brown.
Yeah.
So Marvel Comics in the sense that the books are they're big and fun adventures. You know, they're all standalone stories, but they're big adventures that take place in different lands and magical places. But they're like Peanuts, like Charlie Brown, in the sense that all of the characters are children and are very cute. So it's a 50-50 combination of Marvel Comics adventure and spectacle. And cute little characters like Peanuts, and it deals a lot with childhood and childhood issues.
Yes, you certainly did. Share with us some of the characters that you have in the book.
Sure. The main character in all of the books is named Annalini, and she's named after the pasta, Annalini. And Annalini is a six-year-old girl, and every book deals with an adventure that somehow focuses on Annalini and a lesson that she has to learn in order to save the day or save the world or save the universe. And for example, the fifth book, which is called Macaroni in Space, Annalini goes into outer space. And the lesson that she has to learn in the adventure is all about fear. And the lesson that she learns is that it's okay to be afraid and that everybody is afraid sometimes of something, even adults are. But what makes a hero is recognizing that you're afraid and moving past it and going ahead anyway and doing what needs to be done, even if you're afraid.
Very true. That particular book actually is dedicated to your mom.
Yes.
And that's very interesting because one of the things you've written is that she is your best friend.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
My mom unfortunately passed away in February of 2011, and she passed away midway through that book five, which is called Macaroni in Space. My mom, the best way I can describe it is that, do you know how in every family there are some people that just, they just understand you, and it's sort of an unspoken communication. She just, from a very young age, my mom understood me, and I was not a normal kid. I was not into sports. I wasn't into any sort of traditional kind of boy things, but I was always very into comic books and movies and things that today those things are, you know, very popular and it's okay to like them. But back when I was a kid, it was not very cool to be into those things.
Right,
but my mom, I remember this conversation. I was really young. I had to be like 5 or 6.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a bunch of comic books all over the house because I was so into them. And my dad was very concerned. He thought it was like a strange thing, and he thought it was too much. And I remember sitting in a corner in a room and overhearing a conversation they were having about me liking comic books too much. And my mom defended me. My mom said that he's reading. That's the most important thing. He's reading things.
He's
reading things that are at a higher level than what they're giving him in school to read.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow my mom knew that. That's the kind of thing that moms know that, you know, dads don't always know or realize. And my mom has always been that way. She has always been my champion in that way. And she knew that liking those kinds of things and having unique interests at a young age would somehow in the future be of a benefit to me and to the family.
Very true. Very, very true.
And that's incredible to me. That's the kind of thing that you don't realize until you get older. You know, a lot of this happened because she was wise enough back then, back in the early 1970s, to know, you know, leave him alone, let him try this, let him explore this.
Right. Well, life is a learning experience, and all the experiences that you have encountered make you the person you are today. So that's wonderful that she's able to contribute to you from that perspective. So that's really wonderful. Who is your audience for these books?
The audience for the books, initially, it was kids.
Mm-hmm.
But what happened was, as we did more and more books, the books got more sophisticated, might not be the right way to say it, but the stories got bigger, the stories got funnier, the stories got much more outlandish and adventure oriented. And as they did that, in a lot of the writing, there was a lot of commentary from the adults as to what was going on within the story. So I started to get communication and emails and letters from adults, from parents.
Right.
And they were really, really enjoying the books on their own, you know, without reading them to their kids or before they read them to their kids.
Right.
So the audience for the books, I would say, is parents and children. But it's a case where an adult can read one of the books, especially from book 5 onward. An adult can read the book and enjoy it and laugh without even showing it to his kid. And a kid can read the book and laugh and enjoy it and either share or not share it with a parent. So it's for both.
Right. What I like about it is that you're right. It is for the parents in terms of being able to read this book and just say, hey, this is the best way I know how to communicate to my child on any particular topic. And it is a teaching aid for parents.
That's a great way to put it. I agree. I got a very nice email from somebody in California who basically she has a daughter, and her daughter is very, very shy and very fearful. And she read her the Macaroni in Space book, and that really helped her to realize that it's okay to be afraid. She's not alone. When you're a shy kid, and I was a shy child. When you're a shy child, there's a real sense of isolation about that, and you really do feel alone because there's not a lot of people that are like that or that are like you. And when her mom read her this book, she sort of opened up a little bit and realized that it was actually okay. And it's something that you can overcome. It's something that you can grow out of. And it's something that when you look back on it, it becomes a strength and not a weakness.
Very interesting. So coming back to your main character, Annalini, is she based on anyone in your family?
Annalini originally was definitely my mom as a little girl. My
okay.
mom was a very spunky and courageous and curious little girl.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what Annalini is. And as I go on and do more and more books and more stories, she is a combination of my mom and myself.
Mm-hmm.
Because you get to a point in storytelling where, whether you realize it or not, you're always in some way writing about yourself.
Right.
And so I would say that at this point, where I'm on book number 10, that mm-hmm. Annalini is about 80% my mom and about 20% me.
Very interesting. And how about you, yourself? I mean, do you write yourself into the book as one of the characters?
Yes, there is a character in three or four of the books named Orzo. And Orzo,
mm-hmm.
in real life, Orzo is like a little teeny tiny green pasta. Mm-hmm. It looks like a grain of rice. It's so teeny tiny. And the character of Orzo in the books is desperately in love with Annalini, but he's
mm-hmm.
too afraid to tell her. So
mm-hmm.
he's always sort of stumbling around and always trying to get the courage to tell her. And when he gets the opportunity to tell her, he always messes it up somehow. And so that character is the most me, because
mm-hmm.
that's the way that I've always been most of my life. I mean well, but I can't always communicate verbally what I
mm-hmm.
What I would like to say, especially to girls.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Interesting. That's wonderful to know. How about the rest of the characters? Are they based on, say, your brothers and sisters?
Yes. There's a little of my family in all of the characters. The father character,
mm-hmm.
Daddy Rigatoni, who's obviously a big piece of rigatoni, he is my father. He even looks a little bit like my father, and I based what he looks like, his eyes and his nose, on my dad.
Uh-huh.
The teenage boy, the brother, his name is Riccioli.
Yeah.
And he's a combination of my two older brothers.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a sister, Penny,
right.
Named after, of course, Penny. And she's a combination of my two sisters. I have twin sisters.
Mm-hmm.
And she's a combination of both of their personalities. And there's a grandpa Pappardelli,
mm-hmm.
and a grandma Didalini. And grandpa Pappardelli is based upon my mother's father, my grandfather.
Mm-hmm.
And Grandma Didalini is based upon my father's mother, my grandmother. So it's a combination of my two grandparents from both sides of the family.
How are their thoughts about your books?
My brothers and sisters really, really like the books. They've been mm-hmm. incredibly, incredibly supportive, and they've been bombarding me with suggestions for future stories and future books. Everybody really seems to be into them and really seems to like them.
Yeah.
But they're also very honest and very helpful in terms of during the process of making the books.
Yeah.
They're very critical of the direction I'm going in and the storytelling. And my biggest concern when I'm actually writing and drawing the books.
Yeah.
Is clarity.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to make sure that the storytelling is very, very, very clear. And it has to be because you know, my primary audience
mm-hmm.
visually is children.
Right.
And you need to be able to flip through the books without even reading a word of them and
mm-hmm.
get a really firm grasp of what's going on.
Right.
And my brothers and sisters are excellent with that part of the process. They'll always point out if something is not clear or if a scene doesn't flow into the next scene. And
yeah.
based on that, I'll always either, you know, I'll erase and redraw something, or I'll rethink an entire scene based on one of their suggestions.
I see. So in book 7, Gravy Girl, your sisters Maria and Angela have their hands in it then, I guess.
Yes. Book 7 is called Here Comes Gravy Girl, and it's a superhero
yeah.
adventure.
Yeah.
And it's dedicated to my twin sisters, who have been incredibly supportive. And they were partially responsible for inspiring the story, because
mm-hmm.
I was trying to come up with an idea for the next book.
Mm-hmm.
And the book previous to that is sort of like a James Bond parody. It's a spy,
mm-hmm.
it's a spy movie, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And I was trying to come up with ideas for book 7, and they basically got in my face and said, well, you know, you grew up reading all these superhero comics. They were all
right.
over the house. Why don't
right.
you know, why don't you do that? Why haven't you done that yet?
Mm-hmm.
And they were absolutely right. It's one of those things that it's so obvious, I just didn't think of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so based on their suggestion, I came up with a superhero story that revolves around Annalini being a superhero. Mm-hmm. And the big lesson that she learns in book seven mm-hmm. is that there's a difference between what a real hero is mm-hmm. and what a hero in a comic book is. Mm-hmm. So that's what the whole book is about. That's what she comes to realize. And based on that realization, she does something very, very drastic. And even though she manages to save the day, she makes the right choice, and she chooses being a real hero over being a hero in the eyes of other people.
Interesting. So who is Tony Spumoni?
Tony Spumoni is he's a really fun character. Tony Spumoni is a fellow student at Adelini's school that all of the girls are in love with because he's so
mm-hmm.
handsome.
Mm-hmm.
But Tony Spumoni is only in love with Tony Spumoni. He doesn't see anything but, you know, beyond
yeah.
himself.
Right.
So he's a great character in terms of comedy and in terms of building stories around. In fact, the brand new book, which is called mm-hmm. A Pasta Family Valentine's Day, is mm-hmm. all about Annalini being in love with Tony Spumoni mm-hmm. and not being able to tell him because she's too afraid.
Mm-hmm.
And so Cupid comes down from the land of love to help her out in her relationship with Tony Spumoni. And they go on a huge adventure in the land of love, and basically they have to save romance itself from an evil villain.
Mm-hmm.
And by the end of the book, we find out whether or not Annalini ever gets the courage to talk to Tony Spumoni.
Now, he's the only character that's not a pasta.
Yes, and I did that because I was doing some research in regards to looking at pastas and looking at designs,
mm-hmm.
and I just stumbled across Spumoni ice cream because
mm-hmm.
visually it's really fun. It's
right.
Ice cream, but it's three different flavors and three different colors.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it's a lot of fun to play with his face, and so his face is split up into three little grids and
mm-hmm.
three different colors.
Mm-hmm.
And it just makes that character really pop. I just thought it was a really cute image.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that anybody who had a face like that, who was so colorful, would be very vain and very conceited. And so that's where the character came from.
Very interesting. What other creative process do you go through with regards to writing, drawing, and producing the books?
It's the same process that you go through for any sort of writing endeavor,
mm-hmm.
whether it be a book or a screenplay or a TV show. The first thing that you have to figure out,
mm-hmm.
and you cannot even begin until you figure this out, is what does my main character want? Your main character always wants something. And the thing that he or she wants, it doesn't necessarily have to be a physical thing
mm-hmm.
or a tangible thing. It could be an inner thing. Like, you know, you could want respect. You could want recognition.
Mm-hmm.
In some of the books, what Annalini wants is an inner thing. And in some of the books, it's an outward thing. Like the new book I'm working on is a Halloween story.
Mm-hmm.
And what Annalini wants more than anything during Halloween is candy.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all about if your character wants something and wants it really badly, what you have to do as a writer is to put that character on a road where they are consciously heading toward what they want and trying to get it. And then while they're trying to get what they want, you have to throw a million obstacles in their way.
Mm-hmm.
And on the road to their getting or not getting what it is they want, your character learns a lesson. And that lesson either helps them to get what they want and to triumph,
mm-hmm.
or it makes them realize that what they wanted isn't really worth all the angst they went through to get it. So I would say the process is, before you do anything, figure out what your character wants.
Mm-hmm.
And that, to me, is always, personally, that's always the hardest thing for me, because I can never begin until I know that. And the weird thing about my process is that part of it always comes to me inevitably
mm-hmm.
when I'm stuck in traffic or I'm driving in the car. I don't know why that is. I think it's that weird thing where you're concentrating on something else, like keeping your eyes on the road, so your subconscious sort of takes over and helps you out. But I remember very vividly before I started the Halloween book, I was just kicking myself. I was like, "Well, what does she want? What does this girl want?
Yeah,
I don't know. I can't draw anything until I know that." And then it really hit me, and I was driving, and I pulled over on the side of the road, mm-hmm. and I started, you know, scribbling notes furiously when I had figured out what she wanted. And those are the kind of things where those things, it feels like a gift. When you get an idea like that, it feels like it's not even your idea. It feels like it's a gift, and someone, like, plopped it down into your lap. Mm-hmm. And that's another thing. And that's another thing to me personally that's special about these books is that they're definitely coming from a place that feels like that. It feels it feels like there's some sort of magical aspect to it.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. Are there other challenges in producing each book?
Yes, I'll tell you a personal big challenge, and it's something that I know a lot of writers, and it's something that we all sort of complain about together. When you get into Act Two of your story, when you've set up your conflict and you have your villain and you know what your main character, your hero, wants, and she's going for it, Act Two is all about your main character getting into trouble, basically, and getting thwarted in terms of getting what she wants. And Act Two traditionally is sort of the hardest thing to write. So to me, that's my biggest challenge, and there's nothing more exhilarating to me, because you have to remember I'm doing this alone in a room, and I'm talking to myself most of the time. I'm doing the dialogue to myself, et cetera. So there's nothing more exhilarating than figuring out Act Two, like what actually happens in Act Two and how one scene leads into the next scene. That to me is always the absolute hardest part of the actual storytelling process, and it's the most rewarding part when I get there, when I feel like I've cracked it. And that just happened to me about a week ago. I got to the end of Act Two in the new book, in the Halloween adventure, and I just wanted to go out and celebrate. I wanted to go out and get spaghetti or something. I was so happy. But that's, I think that when you and I'm sure you've spoken to other writers, that's a very traditional obstacle in writing, and I think that's partially because, maybe I'm crazy, I think it's partially because you learn to love your main character so much that you don't want to see him or her get into trouble. You don't want to make it so hard for that character. But if you're going to tell a real story with real emotions, you have to do it. You have to go there.
Right. What's interesting also, you have so many different characters, so it's kind of difficult to really express the various characters in different personalities, so to speak. How do you handle that?
I always remind myself, I have, when I'm drawing, I always have in front of me a bunch of pictures, and they're just penciled pictures, they're not even inked or colored, a bunch of pencil sketches of the characters I'm using in that particular story that I'm telling. And I always have beneath them, I have one or two words that are like the actual heart of that character. Like, I have a picture of Orzo, and beneath Orzo it says shy, well-meaning, and bumbling. So I always come back to that. And in a particular scene, when he's in that scene, I always can just glance over and remember what the heart of that character is. And it definitely helps to differentiate the characters, and it makes them a lot more fun. And also, as the books have gone on and as I've done more of them, because I know the characters as well as I do at this point, and because they are all so different, they get funnier because they get more extreme. Here's an example. In the seventh book, in Gravy Girl, the superhero book, Orzo plays a superhero. He plays a parody of Batman called Dark Orzo. And it's sort of a joke on how grim and how dark all of the Batman movies are, and how super serious they are. Like, they're so serious, they're almost funny. So knowing what I knew about Orzo, Orzo he's so not that kind of character. He couldn't be any more different. He's very positive, even though he's shy. He's kind of a sunshiny, fun, smiley character. So how do you get a character like Orzo, a little kid, to become this, you know, this grim, dark Avenger. And what I came up with is that he's hypoglycemic. And if he misses breakfast, he gets really, really grumpy. And when he gets really, really grumpy, his voice lowers, and all of a sudden he's, you know, he's Christian Bale in the Batman movies.
Very interesting. Coming back to your artwork, who is your biggest influence?
That's a great question. There is an artist from Marvel Comics in the 1970s, and I hope I'm pronouncing his name correctly. Mm-hmm. His name is Sal Buscema. Mm-hmm. And Sal Buscema was an artist who, in the 1970s, in the period when I was really reading comic books, you know, every day and every week, you know, that was what I spent my allowance on. He drew, at one time, he must have drawn every single Marvel character for an extended period of time. And I didn't even know his name, but I always sort of focused on the books that he drew. And this is why. I'm mm-hmm. old enough now to understand why. Because when I was a kid, you would go to the newsstand, and before you bought a comic book, you'd pick it up and you'd sort of thumb through it really quickly. Mm-hmm. Well, Sal Buscema was such a good artist that you could rapidly thumb through one of his comic books and totally understand the entire story. Like, that's what a crystal clear storyteller he was.
Mm-hmm.
So that's always been my biggest influence, because I would never consider myself an artist on a par with somebody like him.
Yeah.
But what I try to do in my own way is to be as crystal clear as possible in regards to storytelling. And that's and I'm talking about, you know, expressions on the characters' faces, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. so you know what they're thinking, but also how the action plays out. If you're doing a fight scene or an adventure scene, I want people to thumb through my books and be like, oh yeah, I get this, I get what he's saying, I get where this mm-hmm. is going, and I haven't even read a word. Mm-hmm. And hopefully that will make you want to buy the book and really do read the story and get the emotions and get the intent of it.
Right. Your yes. idea is to create that emotional connection.
Yes, and that's another challenge of all of these books too.
Mm-hmm.
I should have mentioned that before. I can't really begin to write my story until I know what the big, big, hardcore emotional moment is in the
mm-hmm.
book.
Mm-hmm.
Like, again, my example, the Gravy Girl book, the superhero book. Mm-hmm. In the story of the superhero book, Annalini's mom is having another baby, so she's going to have a baby brother.
Mm-hmm.
And she's very, very conflicted about that, which a lot of little kids are, because you feel like you're being replaced. You feel like you're not going to get the attention that you're used to get, especially if you're in a big family. So Annalini refuses to say hello to her new baby brother when he's born. She runs away. She has an opportunity to go meet him in the hospital, and she runs away. She can't even deal with it. So the book is all about her getting the courage and the strength
mm-hmm.
to not only acknowledge her little brother, but to get to the most emotional part of the book, which is she picks him up out of the crib and she talks to him and she gives him a hug. And that, to me, was that scene. That's the scene I had in my head before I even began the book, before I even thought of all the other superhero stuff that are like
mm-hmm.
the surroundings
mm-hmm.
and the trappings of the book.
Right.
So that's another challenge too, is you have to find that scene. What's the scene that, you know, you want the reader to feel something, and
right.
you don't just want them to feel something. You want them to feel something that we all feel at one time or another in our life.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting.
Yeah. So when I got to that place in the superhero book, it made it much easier to tell the rest of the story, because if you do a story like a superhero adventure or an outer space adventure or even like a Valentine's adventure, the one that I
yes.
just finished,
mm-hmm.
it's all well and good to have spectacle and to be cute and to be funny, and that's all great and you need all that stuff. But if you don't have a real solid emotional core,
mm-hmm.
you're not really giving the reader what you should be giving them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because you need that trigger to really get them excited and into the book, into
yes,
the story.
Yes, and you need your reader to care about what happens to your character. And it doesn't matter if your character is a little piece of macaroni. She's still a character.
Right.
And to the reader, she's a real person. For the time that you're reading the story, you know, we don't always realize this, but when you're actually reading a story, those people are real for the time that you're actually doing the reading.
Right.
And so you want to invest in them. And even if the emotions are not so positive, they're still strong emotions.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what people respond to. And I think that that's what people want. And it's one of the things that I've been very gratified by the response to the books.
Mm-hmm.
There was a review of the Gravy Girl book that was on a very famous comic book website, and that was the thing that they pointed out,
mm-hmm.
that the thing that made this adventure story different from a lot of like childhood adventure stories was it had that emotional arc to it.
Very interesting. What you did, you just created a wonderful character that has in itself be able to be perpetuated down the road.
I think separately
from the rest of the group.
Yes, and I think so because a lot of it is because she's young, and
right.
in the course of the book, she's getting a little bit older. I don't want to age her too much,
right?
But she gets a little bit older. She gains a little bit more experience, and she learns the lessons that we all learn the same lessons in our childhood,
right.
And we get to watch Annalini learn them, book to book to book.
Right. Right.
And that's the part of her, to me, that's the most fun, because she is so young, she makes a lot of mistakes. She's very impulsive, and she's very adventurous, and sometimes she leaps into things before really thinking about them, like a lot of kids do.
Right, right.
And that, to me, lends itself to a lot of different stories and in a lot of different backdrops. And it also is something that the reader can relate to, because a kid can relate to that because, kids are
right,
like that.
Right.
But a parent and an adult can relate to that because they remember doing all those things.
Precisely.
And they remember learning a lot of those lessons the hard way in not so fun a manner.
Mm-hmm. Very true. How does food play a role in the books?
Food plays a tremendous role in all the books. First and foremost, food plays a personal role in the books because that's my fuel. I am constantly eating. I had no idea how much energy you burn up doing these books. I really didn't know. I've never eaten so much in my entire life, and I grew up in a house where food is love in my
house.
That's
right. Mm-hmm.
But I've eaten so much macaroni in the last 5 years. I can't even tell you. It's embarrassing. but food is so very important because in my personal background,
mm-hmm.
first of all, as I said, in my immediate family and in my extended family, food is love. There's if you go to one of my relatives' houses, they are feeding you. And if you don't eat at one of my relatives' houses, they take it as a personal insult, like you're somehow shunning them personally.
Right.
Like you're not allowed to not be hungry in an Italian family. You always have to be hungry, and you always have to be eating something. So it definitely plays a role in that way. And in the sense that because the books are about macaroni and food, I get to branch off into other foods.
Mm-hmm.
And explore, and by doing that, I get to explore other nationalities. And here's my best example.
Mm-hmm.
In book number 4, which is called Showtime,
mm-hmm.
Annalini accidentally gets the lead in the school play. And one of the people that's in the school play is a new student from Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
So he's like a little taco character. And in the context of my story, they've never seen ever in their lives another food besides macaroni.
Mm-hmm.
So they're just blown away by this kid. And some of the kids accept him, but some of the other kids don't. So it becomes a lesson about prejudice and about not
mm-hmm.
judging books by its cover.
Mm-hmm.
So food becomes a vehicle to explore other nationalities and to explore how people respond to other nationalities and to things that you know, you meet somebody new, or you try a new food from a different culture, mm-hmm. and it always seems so strange to you before you do it, but very soon you become used to it, and it becomes second nature, and you become very accepting of it.
Right, right.
So that, to me, is a big lesson in food itself, is that there's an acceptance level that comes with trying different things and trying mm-hmm. new things. I mean, I grew up in an Italian-American house, you know, eating Italian food 7 days a week. I didn't try other foods from other cultures until
yeah.
I was in college. I didn't know that they existed until I was in college. and I really learned to love all different kinds of food, and I love Mexican food. I'm mm-hmm. deeply in love with Mexican food. And that's about broadening your horizons, but more importantly, about being accepting of things that are different.
That's what I like about what you do, because you sort of present the global concept, the global village, from a very soft, subtle way, and in a very friendly way, because food ultimately is the window to the world.
Yes, I couldn't agree more, and that's why it was so important for me to communicate that, even though the books come from an Italian American subculture, mm-hmm. they're for everybody. The stories are universal stories. The things that Annalini goes through are things that every kid everywhere in this country and in the whole world goes through. So it doesn't have to be just about that one culture. And mm-hmm. I've been very, very, very pleasantly surprised that the books have been embraced by so many different kinds of people. When we got our first order for a bunch of books from Nebraska, that just blew my mind. And it really, really made me realize that we were really on to something, and that we were speaking to a lot of different people, and a lot more people than we had thought initially.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. Are you planning to add and introduce more characters in your future books?
Yes. I sent you most of the books. I don't know
yeah.
if I sent you the Thanksgiving book.
No.
In the Thanksgiving book, there's a totally new character mm-hmm. who's the Thanksgiving turkey. Do you know mm-hmm. how for Christmas there's Santa Claus, for Easter
yeah.
there's the Easter mm-hmm. bunny?
Right.
Well, for some reason, for Thanksgiving, there's no Thanksgiving turkey. It's like, why don't we have why isn't there a Thanksgiving turkey? I always wondered that when I was a kid.
Yeah.
So I basically created the Thanksgiving turkey. And the Thanksgiving turkey, he used to be the official mascot for Thanksgiving. He was as famous as Santa Claus was. He was a big star, and in the context of the book, he's sort of fallen from grace. He's sort of like a movie star who lost his career, and so he started eating too much and partying too much and becoming kind of a big fat slob.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the book is all about how Annalini recognizes him and reminds him about how wonderful Thanksgiving is, and basically brings him back to that place of prominence and makes him grateful again.
Very interesting. That's
and
wonderful.
In the current book, which will come out on August 15th, which is a Halloween book,
mm-hmm.
there is a new character called Ghosty, who's a ghost basically,
mm-hmm.
and it's all about he runs away from the land of Halloween, from the spirit world,
mm-hmm.
and Annalini's family takes him in, because Annalini's family, they're accepting of everybody. It doesn't matter where you're from or who you are. So they take him in, and they basically feed him, you know, too much Italian food,
right.
and he loves it so much that he wants to stay. He doesn't ever want to go back.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another new character, and there are several new pasta characters in the book after
mm-hmm.
the Halloween book. I'm working on an Independence Day story. So there's going to be some pasta characters based on
mm-hmm.
Famous Americans like George Washington,
mm-hmm.
Abraham Lincoln, etc., because it's going to be a fun time travel story.
Yeah.
So right now I'm working on turning George Washington and Abe Lincoln and John Hancock into some sort of macaroni kind of – yeah. I'm trying to figure out how to make them into macaroni people at this point.
Right. Interesting. Very interesting. Do you cook?
I cook – I don't cook like my mom does.
Yeah.
But I can cook pretty basic things. I do a lot of cooking for my dad. But I will say this, I do make really, really, really good meatballs. But I only make really good meatballs because I'm using my mom's recipe. And my mom's recipe, it's awesome, and I don't know why restaurants don't do it. It's not that different from a traditional meatball.
Yeah.
But there's a couple of things that she adds and a couple of measurements that she's sort of tweaked over the years.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And it really makes a difference. It makes a huge difference.
Mm-hmm.
And so that, I can't take the credit for that, but mm-hmm. I do make really, really good meatballs. So much so that sometimes I make them in bunches and I send them to my friends in Los Angeles.
That sounds good. You just fly it over to them,
yep.
then, I guess.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. What have you learned about storytelling in the course of doing these books?
What I've learned about storytelling, mm-hmm. first and foremost, is that if you cannot create an emotional connection
mm-hmm.
between you and your audience, you and your reader, you shouldn't be telling a story. you have to have that,
yeah.
absolutely first and foremost. And secondly, I would say you have to be, this is another challenge in these kinds of stories,
mm-hmm.
you have to be constantly entertaining. There's no, you can have scenes that are purely about character
mm-hmm.
and purely about introducing characters, but you have to constantly be entertaining, whether that means doing an action scene, whether that means being just funny, silly, goofy. There's no downtime
mm-hmm.
in this particular kind of storytelling, and I can always tell when I haven't done it correctly. If there's 5 seconds where you're losing interest,
mm-hmm.
you've got to get rid of what you just did and you've got to start over. So you have to constantly. It's almost like I was describing this to a friend about why
mm-hmm.
when I was a kid, Marvel Comics. There were two companies when I was a kid that made comic books,
mm-hmm.
two main companies, Marvel Comics and DC Comics.
Mm-hmm.
And in the 1970s, the difference between Marvel Comics and DC Comics was that if you went to the newsstand, to the little rack where the comic books were,
mm-hmm.
you would look at the DC Comics, and they were okay, but you would look at the Marvel Comics, and just visually, they like reached out and grabbed you by the throat and made you know, there was something so powerful and different
yeah.
about the way that they made their images and their stories.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another lesson. That's something I'm very, very consciously trying to do. It's sort of like if you're going to do an explosion,
mm-hmm.
it has to be the biggest explosion there ever was in the entire universe. You cannot do anything small scale. If your character is sad, she has to be sadder than anyone has ever been in any story in the entire world, which is also what it feels like to be a kid.
Right.
And that's
right.
something I've realized doing these books too. You know, you sort of go back to your childhood in your own head because you have to.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're a kid, everything feels like it's the end of the world or the beginning of the world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're sad, you know, no one has ever been sadder than you.
Right.
And if you're happy about discovering something, you know, you're the first person that's ever discovered this thing, and nobody is luckier or happier than you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something I've tried to recreate with Annalini especially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because kids are living in a present moment, and they are just thinking about that particular time, moment
yes,
in time.
Yes, I think you said it best. That's perfect, yeah. And that's something that, as an adult, it's not impossible to recapture that, but it definitely,
right.
you know, life and responsibility and other things in life, that, you know, it can sort of take that away from you.
Right.
And that's a constant struggle in my own creative life, is that
mm-hmm.
you can't let quote-unquote real life take away that part of you that's still hyper-enthusiastic about little things
right.
or really into things that, you know, nobody else might appreciate or be into. You can
right.
never really lose that part of yourself, because that's part of what spurs you on creatively.
What would you like for the readers to gain in reading the various books?
This is what I would like ideally.
Mm-hmm.
I would like someone to read one of the books and, first of all, crack up laughing and really, really enjoy themselves.
Yeah.
But then I would like them to put the book down and walk away from it and suddenly realize that they got a life lesson. And they got the life lesson in such a humorous way that it didn't feel like they were being preached to.
Right.
They just sort of assimilated it as they were reading, and now they're appreciating it. That's what I would absolutely love.
That's wonderful. It's like living the life rather than being lectured, like you say, or being scolded or in any
yes,
way.
Yes. I would the way I would describe it is I want to give them an experience. Mm-hmm. And I want the experience to be really fun and really funny and really exciting, but I also want it to be really, really heartfelt.
Wonderful. Where can someone go to buy your books, get more information about you, and keep up with your latest happenings?
Oh, sure. The books are available on our website. Our website is www.thepastafamily.com, one word. And all of the books are also on Amazon.com.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Do you have any advice for aspiring writers, artists, and storytellers who are listening in this morning?
Yes. This is what I would say. This has been a huge lesson to me personally mm-hmm. in the last 5 years of doing this. And how can I put this? I would say discipline is actually more important than inspiration. And most people think the opposite way,
mm-hmm.
but let me explain. Doing these books requires much more discipline than I anticipated when I started doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And the more I do them, the more disciplined I get in regards to doing them and scheduling the time and doing, you know, a certain amount of pages, mm-hmm. you know, and a certain amount of hour, et cetera. I give myself deadlines and all that. But you can't begin until you're inspired to tell a story. But while you're actually doing the physical and mental work of mm-hmm. telling the story, discipline is much, much more important, because here's an example. There'll be a day or a morning where I'll come downstairs and I don't particularly feel like, you know, getting right to work at 6:30.
Right.
But I do it anyway. And once I start, I might start from a place that's not, you know, the best frame of mind. But mm-hmm. once you start, as you go, about a half hour into the process, you find inspiration where you never realize, you know, it could have come from. But that only happens as a byproduct of discipline.
Do you daydream a lot?
When I'm doing the books, I mm-hmm. don't daydream a lot.
Mm-hmm.
When I'm in between books, whenever I finish a book, I take a week off just to sort of recharge. And that is when I daydream a whole lot. I just can't help it. It's sort of like all my daydreaming catches up with me. But while I'm doing the actual books,
yeah.
for some reason, there's not that much daydreaming going on. The only thing that would be close to daydreaming mm-hmm. is that once in a while, maybe once a month, I might give myself like a little break and mm-hmm. go see a movie.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that's sort of it's just a way of getting out of your own head for a couple of hours.
Right. So you're clearing the hard drive, but when you are working, you are daydreaming in the character.
Yes. Yes. I get you're consciously daydreaming.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's why it doesn't feel like daydreaming, but that is what you're doing. You're just sort of channeling it all onto a page.
Right.
And that's been a surprising thing too, that. I'm very surprised. My normal pace when I was doing just screenplays or just books without
mm-hmm.
pictures,
mm-hmm.
my normal pace was a lot slower.
Mm-hmm.
But that was because I was not as disciplined as I am now.
Mm-hmm.
So there've been a ton of gifts that have come from just sit down and do it. You know, put yourself on a schedule, sit down and stick to that schedule no matter what. And no
yeah.
matter what your particular attitude is on any given day, and at the end of the day, you will have really good work, and you'll surprise even yourself.
Very interesting.
But yeah, I I used to have writer friends who would basically they would say, well, I don't feel like doing it today.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, you know what? You know, my father doesn't always feel like going to work, but he goes.
Right. Right.
And because he goes, you know, he does well. And at the end of the day, I'm sure he's glad that he went.
That's right. That's right.
And that it's the same discipline. You know, you just apply that to the arts. The arts are not so different from any sort of quote unquote normal day job kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You have to show up. You have to show up, and you have to do the work.
And you can't
wait for Tinkerbell to come along and give you an idea.
Very true. How has taking over the series from your mother impacted you personally?
Oh, that's a great question. I feel very strongly that when my mom passed away, we were both in the middle of book number 5 of Macaroni in Space. I feel very energized in regards to continuing on and doing these books, because I feel like they're her legacy.
Mm-hmm.
They're not mine. They're hers. And I feel like before she left us, she gave something to the world that I think is really impactful, really sweet, really heartfelt, and really important, and really enjoyable that has resonated with other people. So I feel a sense of responsibility to keep that going, and not just to keep it going, but to expand it. Since my mom has passed away, the stories have gotten bigger, they've gotten broader, they've gotten more comedic. They're more of a combination of my personal sensibility plus my mom's heartfelt nature. So I feel like that's another of the many gifts that my mom gave me, was that she let me know in her own way that it's okay to infuse my own passions and my own personality and my own ideas into this venture, because that's not taking away from the work that she did. It's adding to it.
Right. Right. Wonderful. By the way, we're coming close to the end of the show. Do you have a recipe for living you would like to share with our listeners this morning?
Sure, because I'm not allowed to give out my meatball recipe, so I'll give you a recipe for living. This is what I'll say. It sort of comes back to what we were talking about before.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a recent discovery of mine.
Mm-hmm.
I never would have realized this even 5 years ago. Discipline, showing up for your own life, no matter what endeavor you're involved in, showing up and being present in the way that you had talked about, Johnny, in the way that a child is present,
right?
In a way that the moment is what matters,
right?
You know, you're even if it's something simple, even if you're out with friends, to be present and to be in the moment is so important and so rewarding, and that makes all the difference in regards to your own personal goals and your ambitions. That makes all the difference, because when you're in the moment to that extent, you're adding all of your passion and all of your emotion and all of your angst too to what you're doing. And if you do that, if you're that present, and you have to have a certain amount of courage to be that present as well, it takes some practice.
Right.
But if you are that courageous to be that present, the work that you do will, not only will it be good and will it surprise you, but nobody else will be able to do it the way that you do it. You don't have to strive to be so unique and so individual when you're actually present.
Very, very true.
So that would be my recipe.
Fantastic. Michael, thank you for the great recipe for living and for spending this hour with me on From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. To all our listeners, Thank you for being with us. Please join me next Tuesday morning. My guest will be award-winning author Eleanor Sullivan. Eleanor and I will be discussing her debut historical mystery novel set in 1830s in an Ohio village titled Cover Her Body. For additional information about this show and future shows, please go to FromMyMamasKitchen.com. Thank you for listening and have a great 4th of July week. Michael, thank you again and have a great day and 4th of July as well.
Thank you. You too.
Thank you. Bye-bye.